And I asked you if you ever thought it was okay for a case for abortion. And back then you had said that in cases of rape, incest, and life of the mother,
yes,
you thought they were okay.
Yes.
But just about a week ago, you signed the Personhood USA,
yes,
pledge. So to me, it seems kind of like a contradiction where you were a month ago. And
you're seeing a transformation.
Okay.
And
what was that transformation?
That transformation was after watching the DVD.
Was there like one defining moment in that that really just kind of opened your eyes?
No, it was actually before it, when the lady who was in the DVD was looking me in the eye and saying, you need to really think this through. Because she said, I am the product of a rape.
They're clapping. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman, the place where justice is served. That was presidential hopeless Rick Perry saying that he had a transformation. He saw the light because this woman who runs this organization called Personhood USA, her name is Rebecca Kiesling, looked him in the eye and said, she is a product of rape. Now, I don't want to intrude on any of pain. I don't have any idea what that would be like. But I do know that that argument is a form, it feels like a form of emotional blackmail. I'm sure her life was very difficult, and I'm sure that she's overcome a lot to be the person that she is and to be where she is. That is an unimaginable pain. So I am not criticizing her person or her life, but I am criticizing her choice to make it political, to try to overturn 35 years of established law that keeps women safe, that is about women's health and well-being, to get the state to intrude on a woman's right to do what she wants to do with her own body. So I looked it up, and I went to the National Organization for Women. And I've got a before and after Roe portrait. Okay, so here goes. Before Roe, both legal and illegal abortion posed an alarming risk to women's health. Abortion was not a crime and was quite common in the U.S. during the 1700s and 1800s. During this period, primitive methods such as physically striking a pregnant woman's abdomen or introducing foreign objects were used to induce abortion, frequently killing or injuring the woman. Laws passed across the country between 1860 and 1880 prohibited abortion at any point during pregnancy. However, illegal, quote, back alley abortions remained widely available throughout the next century. Approximately 50% of all maternal deaths, this is before Roe v. Wade, approximately 50% of all maternal deaths resulted from illegal abortions. This is Adam Klugman in for Norman Goldman. It's your calls next. This is the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman this week, and what a pleasure it is. I've promised dealer's choice. I've done my rant. I've gotten mad as hell. It's your turn. Let's go to Adam in Seattle. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. You're on with moi.
Adam, thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's up?
I'd like to talk about one of the most troubling pieces of legislation to come across the president's desk recently, and that would be the NDAA.
I had a feeling you were going there. Go ahead. Well, you want to tell everybody what it is?
It's like Adam and Adam are on the same page. You see there?
We are. Well, you want to tell people what that is?
The National Defense Authorization Act.
Correct.
The reason I'm so troubled with it is because basically they've done away with posse comitatus.
Right.
And I have a little conspiracy snossage to go along with this.
I have one too. Go ahead.
Well, I understand that they've already been using predator drones to chase down cattle somewhere in the Midwest because they found, you know, cattle have a tendency to bust through fences and
wander
onto other people's property. And at that point, they become other people's property because they're damaging that other person's property. And they're going to keep that critter as part of the damage that they've created.
Right.
common law in the United States. So the sheriff's out looking for cattle, and he comes to these people, and they meet him. These people meet the sheriff with their shotguns and say, hey, you're trespassing. You have no reason to be here. So they send up predator drones to find the cattle and find these people, these farmers, basically, who raise their own food and arm themselves. And you know, so
how does this link up with the NDAA?
With the federal government using military predator drones to spy on us. I'm really bothered by this whole thing.
Yeah, I think there's lots of elements to it. And for those people who don't know, the National Defense Authorization Act is something that the president promised he would veto if it hit his desk, if it had in it a provision for indefinite detention of U.S. citizens anywhere in the world, including the continental United States. That's why he Adam referenced Posse Comitatus, and I appreciate the call, Adam. That's why he referenced Posse Comitatus, which refers to the fact that it is illegal to use military, the United States military, on U.S. soil to essentially against United States citizens. If the president signs the NDAA, and I don't think it's on his desk yet, if he signs it, it would essentially make the entire world a battlefield, which would authorize the president to grab anyone anywhere in the world based on the fact that he thought they were a terrorist. That's all that's required. And then he can grab them and detain them indefinitely without due process. That is what Adam was talking about. If you put that together with predator drones and a couple of other things, it gets pretty scary. Let's go to Nick in Tacoma. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. Nick, you're on with Adam Klugman.
Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. What's up?
I just wanted to talk about defense spending here. I just wanted to let these Republicans know that us liberals don't like wasteful government spending any more than they do, which is why we are outraged that over 40% of our taxes are spent on defense, something we can't eat, drive, smoke, drink, live in, be educated by. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't want to hear any talk about cutting services when we spend all that, waste all that tax money.
It does seem insane, and I wouldn't even call it defense money. I would defense budget. I would call it an aggression budget, because that seems to be what we use it for, right? We don't use it to actually defend ourselves. What we do use it for is to aggress on other countries, say Iraq, starting an illegal war against an essentially defenseless country based on lies. So that's what 40% of your tax dollar goes to. And I'm with you there, Nick. It seems insane. Thanks for the call, Nick. I do appreciate it. 1-888-321-6001. We're doing Dealer's Choice here on the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman in for Norm. What makes you mad as hell? I have a show called Mad as Hell in America. And sometimes I ask my callers to call in and tell them what makes them mad as hell. What makes you mad as hell? Pick any topic. I pick my topic. What's your topic? And it's important to get up here and say what makes you mad as hell, because, you know, it's one thing to be mad as hell in your living room, in your car, when you're walking your dog, but it is another thing entirely to get mad as hell in public, to stand up and declare your piece, to claim your legitimate anger over what is going on in this world. Because if you're not angry, I don't think you're paying close enough attention. And there's nothing wrong with anger, and it's different from rage. And in the third hour, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this. The numbers here, 1-888-321-6001. That's 1-888-321-6001. What makes you mad as hell? This is Adam Klugman on the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. It's your calls when we come back. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served and where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman. sitting in for Norm. I want to start this segment by saying thank you to all of the listeners, all of the callers, all of the great emails that I've gotten. You guys have been so supportive. I feel so welcome. It's hard to fill the shoes of a guy like Norman Goldman, and I'm honored to be here and feel so welcomed. Even those who disagree with me, that's what this is about. Healthy, productive disagreements move us forward. I've had lots of requests for a speech I gave last week. I rewrote the president's speech. I had the audacity to rewrite the president's speech in Osawatomie, Kansas. I've had a lot of requests for it. You can get it at my website at madashellinamerica.com. I think the audio is there, but I know the text version of it is there. If you want to check it out, go to madashellinamerica.com. You cannot miss it. So we're doing Dealer's Choice here on the Norman Goldman Show. And for those of you who don't play poker, Dealer's Choice is, well, if you've got the cards, you get to call the game. And that's what we're doing today. We're going to calls. We're going with you. You are the guest this first hour. 1-888-321-6001. 1-888-321-6001. Let's go to Ann in Denver. You're on the Norman Goldman Show.
Hi.
Hi, Ann.
I totally agree with everything you said about abortion. I had an abortion back in 1973, but what you don't know is happening is that the Catholic Church is instigating punishing people who have had abortions, and I'm a victim of this.
Retroactively?
Uh-huh.
I did not know this.
No, nobody knows it, and I can't prove it is the problem. But what they do is I worked in a special care nursery, and a friend of mine, so-called friend of mine, identified me as having had an abortion. Well, every single person in that nursery is pro-life.
Okay.
I mean, there is nobody.
Let's call them anti-abortion or anti-choice. I don't like pro-life. I'm pro-life. But
okay.
I'm also pro-choice. Let's call them anti-choice.
So what they do is, this is a game they play. They identify you, then they abuse you at work. And they continue to abuse you. And then they get people to email to one another, making me look like I am nuts.
What do you mean, making you look like you're nuts? In what way?
That I'm volatile, I'm not in control, that I blow up easy,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ann. So what you're saying is that basically somebody who knew that you had an abortion outed you at work, and they started a whisper campaign about you spreading essentially what are lies, right?
That I'm totally out of control. Now, they followed me from job to job to job.
Wow.
Doing this. And I think that I've even actually been recorded. And with people that have been friends for like 35 years. Now, most of these people are Catholic. I can't prove any of this.
I'm not asking for proof, but what led you to believe that? Did you see any emails? I mean, what led you to believe that there was suddenly this kind of whisper campaign going on about you?
Because it's been going on for years, and it's a pattern, and it happens over and over and over again. And it starts in October, which is anti-abortion month for the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church close by me states that they put out all these little flags on the lawn, pink and blue flags, thousands of them. And then they put a sign up that says, these flags represent the 51 million children that have been aborted and the parents that regret having done so. And what they do is they make you regret until you go get, I don't know what they expect people to do. I guess they expect people to go.
So do they want you to join their regret campaign?
I guess. Yeah. But you're forced into it. I mean, this is like torture.
I haven't heard any. If there are any other callers out there, or listeners out there, rather, who know anything about this, who have ever experienced something like this, give us a call. That's scary stuff. And if you ever get any evidence, call back in. You can send me an email at adam@madishellinamerica.com. This would be quite a discovery. If this was really an organized effort to kind of shame and control and libel people who have made the choice to have an abortion on the part of the Catholic Church, it seems entirely possible given the history of the Catholic Church. And I do appreciate the call. Good luck to you. That sounds horrible. Numbers here, 1-888-321-6001. As I said, it's dealer choice. So what makes you mad as hell? What makes you mad as hell? Norm sent me a story that I'm going to get into in a minute that makes me mad as hell and probably will make you mad as hell. And like I've been saying, there's a difference between being mad as hell in your living room, in your car, in your kitchen, walking your dog, and ranting to yourself, and really getting out in public and declaring it. Something happens when you claim your legitimate anger. It is empowering, and you begin to hear what it's trying to tell you. And it's trying to tell you that we have to respond, that you have to respond in your own unique way. And I'm going to talk about this a lot during the course of this show, particularly in the third hour. The number's here, 1-888-321-6001. What makes you mad as hell? Let's go to Jerry in Chicago. Hey, Jerry, how are you?
I'm fine.
Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Thank you. I got a couple of comments about the personhood stuff.
Yeah, okay.
First of all, personhood, is if it's defined from conception, would make various forms of birth control illegal. IUDs, for example, do not prevent conception. They simply stop the egg from adhering to the uterine wall.
That's right.
So there would be various forms of contraception which would be illegal under such a law.
Yes.
And my larger point was that if we look around the world today, if we look at the various problems we face,
Hello, I'm still here. We're still here. Just a dial tone.
We have pollution, food shortages, global warming, toxic waste, all this stuff.
Right.
All these things are a consequence of one underlying factor, overpopulation.
Right.
If we eliminate birth control, if we eliminate abortion, we merely contribute to all the other problems that beset us.
Well, it's true. I mean, I hate to think that what we're going to do is, you know, control the population through abortion. But your point is well made and well taken. But I think that the larger point is that people have a right to choose what they do with their own bodies.
Oh yeah, I prefer education.
Right, and what's frustrating about it is okay, so. The minute, like I was saying in the opening, you know, the minute that someone's born, you're on your own. So all the things that you outlined, we're not addressing all the things that kill people, air pollution, wars. I mean, war is mega abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, this illegal war in Iraq, it's unconscionable.
We would just make it worse in the name of some sort of, I don't know, religious belief, some moral code that I don't know how it possibly rationalizes this, but apparently they think it does. Anyhow, that was my only comment.
Well, I appreciate it, Jerry. Thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. You know, so what are we going to do? I mean, people want to impose their own morality. The best aphorism I've heard about abortion is if you don't agree with abortion, don't have one. But trying to restrict other people's choices, that's a slippery slope, like Jerry just said. Then all of a sudden, where do we end up? Now there's no birth control. I mean, there's no family planning. We know they want to gut every family planning institution in this country because somehow they equate helping people make good choices about family planning with abortion, which is just absolutely nuts. So it's so irrational, I can't even get into it. If you want, again, I've been saying it's dealer's choice, 1-888-321-6001 are the numbers. Norm sent me a little story that really made me mad as hell. The title of it is from the New York Times, Economic Downturn Took a Detour at Capitol Hill. Here's what's going on. The members of Congress are getting richer faster than the top 10% of the people in this country. Let me read this to you. There is broad debate about why the wealth gap appears to be growing. For starters, the prohibitive costs of political campaigning may discourage the less affluent from even considering a candidacy. Beyond that, loose ethics controls, we know that, shrewd stock picks. Yes, we've learned that Congress can actually participate legally in insider trading, profitable land deals, favorable tax laws, inheritances, and even marriages to wealthy spouses are all cited as possible explanations for the rising fortunes on Capitol Hill. While the median net worth of members of Congress jumped 15% from 2004 to 2010, the net worth of the richest 10% of Americans remained essentially flat. Congress is getting richer than the richest people in our country. For all Americans, median net worth dropped 8% during that period based on inflation-adjusted data. Going back further, the median wealth of House members grew some 2.5 times between 1984 and 2009, while the wealth of the average American family has actually declined in that same time period. Does that make you mad as hell? It sure makes me mad as hell. What are we going to do? You know, we wonder why we can't get legislation in this country that will help redistribute the wealth. Well, there you go. The people that are in Congress are the one percenters. There are over 10 people in Congress worth over $100 million. Darrell Issa is worth between $195 million and $700 million. I can't even conceive of $700 million. Can you? So this makes me mad as hell. That I can assure you. I hope that it makes you mad as hell. Let me tell you a little bit about what's coming up in the next hour. We're going to have Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeis. They are core organizers on the ground as part of something called the October 2011 movement. That's October2011.org. You can check it out. What's interesting is that they started organizing when Occupy Wall Street wasn't even yet a glimmer in the eye of adbusters that put out the call. They're going to be here in the next hour to talk about the Occupy movement, where we are, where we're going, and what's going to happen in the spring. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm in for Norman Goldman, and this is the place where justice is served and where fierce independence is the norm. We'll be right back.
The home of fierce independence, intelligent dialogue, and passionate logic is right here, right now. Sitting in for Norm, here is Adam Klugman, host of Mad as Hell in America Radio. Heard Saturdays on AM 620, Portland's Talk, KPOJ.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman this week. Coming up on the new year, I hope you're going to have an excellent one. It is 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar. And I like to think of it not as the end of the world, but the end of a bunch of old ways of thinking and doing things. Wouldn't that be really cool? That it really is about a new beginning and not about an ending of the world, but rather an ending of the old way of doing things in this world, because that is what we need. And I believe that that is what the Occupy movement represents. Not just a shift in our political structures and our political power, but also a shift in global consciousness, because the Occupy movement is not just happening in this country. It is happening all over the world. And our next guests are going to help us figure out, find out, and discover where we are with the Occupy movement. These are two people that I rely on when I don't know what to think. I call these two people and ask them what I should probably be thinking. In a minute, I'm going to introduce them, but I want to play two clips back to back. The first clip is from Jeremy Rifkin, who was our guest last week. They're unrelated in time and space. And the second clip is from one of our guests, Margaret Flowers, and I will introduce her when I come back. But I was struck as I was preparing for the show, I was struck by the parallel imperative in each one of these clips. So we're going to play them back to back, and then I'm going to bring on my guests.
I want to start on a somber note. I do hope it'll be a liberating reflection afterwards. My sense is, this is hard to say, but my sense is that really this is our moment as to whether or not we're going to make it. I think it's possible we are in the shadow of our own extinction on this planet. Hard to say. It sounds melodramatic. It always seems to be over the top when I utter it. And I'm mindful that throughout history, there's been so many apocalyptic visions of doom, and thank God they've all turned out to be dead wrong. But I'm going to share a statistic with you this afternoon. Mull it over, and you come to your own conclusions. We're devouring this Earth, and it's probably going to lead to our extinction unless we turn this around quickly. This is just not sustainable by any reckoning.
As a physician, one of the hardest things was when somebody was very sick and you had to actually tell them how sick they are. But it's important in that situation to be honest. And so I think that we need to be really honest. You guys are all aware, that's why you're here, that we're facing crises on multiple levels in this country. That we don't have a lot of time. That some people are saying we have one generation. So it's time for us as people to seize our power, our democracy. It's not about elections right now. It's about what you're hearing tonight, which is about movement building. It's about democratizing our institutions.
There are people out there getting it. And they're getting it in different spaces and at different times, but it is happening. I love those two clips because Jeremy Rifkin comes on and says, this is our moment. And I think that's what Occupy represents, our claiming of this moment. And then Margaret Flowers, who was speaking at an event, says, you know, it's hard. I'm a physician. It's hard to tell the patient. One of the hardest things about being a doctor is telling people that they are sick, but the truth is essential. So I'm going to bring on Margaret Flowers, and then after that, I'm going to bring on Kevin Zeis. So let me give you an introduction to Margaret Flowers. She is a Maryland pediatrician who advocates for single-payer health reform with Physicians for a National Health Program and healthcarenow.org. Her political activism took a quantum leap forward when she found herself part of a group of protesters called the Bacchus Eight, who were arrested for disrupting a Senate's finance committee by demanding to testify on behalf of single-payer. A subject that was and still is conspicuously absent from our healthcare discussion. She is also co-director of itsoureconomy.us and is speaking to us from D.C., where she has been on the ground as a core organizer of the October 2011 movement since, well, October. Margaret Flowers, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Thank you, Adam. It's great to be on with you again.
Always a pleasure. And then I would also like to bring on someone whom I respect greatly. I don't know if I just used whom properly, but his name is Kevin Zeis, and he is also a core organizer of the Occupy Washington, D.C. movement and is co-director of It's Our Economy, which seeks to democratize the economy, and is co-chair of Come Home America, which brings people from across the political spectrum together who oppose war and militarism. He was, a few months ago, called the father of the Occupy movement, and anyone who knows Kevin's history of uncompromising organizing and activism over the past 30 years accepts that this is not an overstatement. Kevin Zeis, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Thanks for having me on, Adam. Good to hear your voice.
It's nice to have you guys back. So what did you think about that Rifkin clip? Have you ever heard him say that before?
Personally, no, I haven't heard him say that before. But it is true. We're using up our resources on this planet at 140% capacity. So that's just not sustainable.
And what you said...
He's certainly not the only one to say that and see that. There's been for a while now people recognizing that we're on an unsustainable path. That we're using up resources quickly, and that we need to make a dramatic course change. And so I think we're in the midst of what people have been calling since the beginning of the century of the Great Turning, when we're really changing the direction of the way we do business in this world, the economy and the political structures.
I think we're finally coming to understand that, and I would assume that you both agree that the Occupy movement represents a claiming of that moment, that, as you say, Kevin, this is the turning. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think this is really a critical moment. People have woken up. They have seen that they actually do have power, despite the messages of disempowerment. They see that they actually can have a voice, and they're finding a political voice. And so I think this is a great moment in history for an opportunity for transformational change. It's not going to be done in one occupation. This is the beginning of a movement, not the end of one. And so we have a ways to go, but I do see this as really beginning to show some great potential.
So before we get into some of the questions, I want to ask you guys, give a little background on the October 2011 movement that you guys started before the Adbusters put out the call for the Occupy Wall Street to begin, and tell us how those have kind of come together to into one.
Sure thing. So this occupation of Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. is something that we started organizing with others back in April of this year. It came somewhat out of our association with Chris Hedges and his calling for a culture of resistance, and also just the sense that so many of the issues that we advocate on, we reach the same obstacle, they come up against the same obstacle, which is the corporate control of our political process and the corporate control of the media message. And so there was a sense among the people that we reached out to that it was time to do something different. We were inspired by what was happening around the world and what was happening in Madison, Wisconsin, with the occupation there. And so we started organizing for the occupation of Freedom Plaza to begin on October 6th, because that was the 10th anniversary of the invasion of Afghanistan, but also the first week of the federal budget, which is an austerity budget for everything but the military. And we wanted to kind of point out that, you know, these issues are all connected. And it's exciting. When we went public on June 6th and Adbusters called for Occupy Wall Street on the end of July, some of our organizers started attending their organizing meetings, and we expressed solidarity with Occupy Wall Street immediately. It's pretty exciting. We thought we would be the first occupation, and we ended up, there were hundreds of occupations already on the day that, that we started ours. So there's a sense that this really is the time. Our job is now to move this forward effectively to negotiate this great turning successfully.
Our guests are Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeist. They are core organizers on the ground in D.C. of the October 2011 movement. Kevin, do you guys still identify, self-identify rather, as the Occupy 2011 movement? How has that morphed and changed?
Well, when we started, you know, this is before Occupy began, so October 2011 was more taken from the European and Arab Spring approach of giving a date and time or a month and time as your name. And then when the Occupy movement began, everyone said Occupy X, Occupy Y. And so we're now Occupy Washington, D.C., and the website's OccupyWashingtonDC.org. That's more of what the movement and the media and the people of the United States are used to, and so we kind of just changed the name, but it's the same website and the same people involved.
So let's get into it a little bit. You know, the it was when the Occupy movement first hit and Occupy Wall Street still hit, it was just all over the news all the time. It was part of the 24/7 news cycle, included in everything that was spoken about on the news. And naturally, I guess over time there has been an ebb, but we haven't talked since there was this kind of systematic eviction of the Occupy camps across the country. So I kind of want to start there. And I say that they were systematic because it seemed to me that it was a little too much of a coincidence that so many of these camps got cleared at exactly the same time. So, first of all, what is your take on that? Was it systematic? And do you think we still need the camps to move forward with the Occupy movement, or is it an idea at this point?
Right. Well, there is some information that there was national coordination, or at least national conversations, about what to do about the Occupy encampments. And so it does certainly seem that there was some strategy behind that, you know, to coordinate those closures. We, from the beginning, saw the occupation of Freedom Plaza as just the beginning, like a tactic, a first step in building this movement, this independent movement that will be broad-based, nonviolent, and transformative. And that really what the Occupy to us, the importance was to come out publicly and very visibly to occupy a space and say that, you know, this, what's happening in this country, going in the wrong direction in the country and around the world, and that it's not acceptable, and that you know, we're here to do something about it. And so it did affect the political dialogue. It did bring awareness to people of what the issue is. But there's a lot more work that needs to be done to build this movement. And I think for some of the occupations that have been closed down, they've actually found it somewhat liberating not to have to work so hard to maintain the physical space, because that is very resource intensive, especially here in Washington, D.C. We still have our camp going, but we struggle with keeping warm, making sure that people are fed, that they're sheltered from the elements. And that does take away from the other work, you know, energy for the other work that needs to be done. So at some point, and we're kind of in a transition now, we are starting to weigh the benefits of continuing to occupy physically the space.
Our guests are
Washington, D.C., Adam, we see this as a multi-year, maybe even multi-decade struggle. You know, you can never tell with transformation, with transformative change, how quickly it happens. Sometimes things you're imagining happening 5 years or 7 years from now happen 5 weeks from now. So it's all unpredictable. We're preparing for a long marathon because we're challenging a very powerful, concentrated wealth group. And that corporate power that rules the government is our target. We want to shift power to the people. And over decades, really, we've seen corporate rule get stronger and stronger, affect all parts of our life. And so we're untangling a lot of knots that affect really all aspects of healthcare, entertainment, energy, local versus national economies. Just, you know, you pick an aspect of life and corporate power is mixed in with it. And so we have a lot of work to undo it. The electoral system has been turned into a mirage democracy where we only get to choose from two corporate approved candidates who are dominated by concentrated corporate wealth. The corporate media has been very concentrated, only allows corporate candidates on the air. The debates are controlled by corporations that only that select certain candidates to be in them and exclude others. So we have a real problem to overcome, a lot of issues. And so we saw this as a long-term effort, and so the people should not get attached to the tactic of sleeping in a public park. While we think that's very important, taking back the Commonwealth, showing ourselves publicly, and it's a tactic we may come back to again and again, I hope that we learn from this experience, and then the next time we come back to the Occupies, we even do it better, because there were definitely mistakes made that we can learn from this experience. But the real movement is much bigger than that. And so we have to find new tactics and to develop our strategy of pulling down the columns, the structures that hold the status quo in place. That's really the goal, is to end corporate rule, shift power to the people with an independent, long-term, persistent movement.
Our guests are Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the upcoming presidential election and what role you see the Occupy movement playing in that, if at all. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. I'm Adam Klugman in for Norm this week. We'll be right back with Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese after this. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. Our guests are Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese, core organizers of the October 2011 movement on the ground in D.C., also core organizers, thinkers of the Occupy movement in general. Kevin and Margaret, welcome back to the show. This is for either of you. Let's talk about the upcoming presidential election. Do you see Occupy playing a role in the presidential election coming up in 2012?
Well, I think we'll play a role in that we are going to shape the debate. The Occupy movement is going to continue to grow. There's going to be a very major American spring next year that people are talking about all over the country. And it's going to be something that cannot be ignored by the media again and will affect the debate. And with President Obama going around the country holding fundraisers that cost $38,500 to get into, more than the median income of Americans, and with the likely candidate Mitt Romney getting lots of money from Wall Street as well, we'll have two Wall Street candidates who are, you know, running a time of anti-Wall Street fervor. And so I think what we're going to show is how out of touch the politics of the electoral politics of the country are to what the real issues of the country are. We're going to show the irrelevance, really, of what's going on in those debates by two Wall Street candidates at a time when most Americans recognize Wall Street is the problem.
Yeah, Wall Street is the problem. Go ahead, Margaret.
Piggyback on that. Kevin mentioned earlier that, you know, we're working to weaken the pillars that hold this current power structure up. And until the power is shifted in this country, really, it's not who we elect. Because no matter who we elect into this current system, it's a dysfunctional system. So we really don't think that an electoral strategy at this time is a successful strategy. There's more work to do until that becomes effective to build a movement.
Our guests are Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese, core organizers on the ground in D.C. of the Occupy movement. We're having the conversation about where are we now, what role we should be playing in the upcoming 20 election. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your experience with this system. I think people are impatient. I think people feel like, well, they want the Occupy movement to make change now, but it is, as Kevin said, going to take some time. The numbers here, 1-888-321-6001. Remember, this is not a conversation we are having at you. We are having it with you here on the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman this week before the beginning of the new year, and we are appropriately talking about the Occupy movement because I think 2012 is going to be an important year for change in this country, and I see the Occupy movement as means for that change. I have two guests helping me make sense of all this. They are Margaret Flowers, a Maryland pediatrician who advocates for single-payer health reform. She is a core organizer on the ground of the October 2011 movement. Margaret, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Adam.
And Kevin Zeese, who is an organizer of the Occupy Washington, D.C., and also co-director of It's Our Economy, recently called Father of the Occupy Movement. And those of us who know Kevin know that this is apt. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot.
So I want to take some calls. We've got some calls on the board. But I want to talk, Margaret, a little bit to you, because there's this ongoing debate, you know, should we be working within the system for change, or do we need to somehow take a stand outside the system for change? And I know that you began your work as a political activist trying to work inside the system, specifically in Washington. What was your experience?
Well, it's just very clear that policy at the national level primarily is not made on the basis of the evidence of what works or even the public interest, that what is allowed to be discussed up in Congress is a very narrow spectrum of what's desired by the corporate interest. And most of the honest legislators will say that they need to get reelected, and in order to get those funds, they have to please the people that fund, you know, the corporations and businesses that fund their elections. So when, when we see hearings, especially on healthcare, primarily the people that were invited to testify at those hearings were the industries that profit in the healthcare industry. It's a very eye-opening experience. It's just a dysfunctional system at this point, and trying to work within it is just, it's going to be doing the same thing over and over again and not being successful. So that's why we're out here occupying.
The working definition of insanity, doing the same thing over again and expecting a different result. That's what is so exciting about the Occupy movement. I think lots and lots of us recognize it. I want to give, as I say, I ask people to call in because this is not a conversation we want to have at them, but with them. So let's go to David in Seattle. You're on the phone with Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hey, thanks, Adam. Thank you so much. Hey, I'm going to try to integrate my question into the format here. I was kind of on hold for a while, so bear with me.
Okay.
But I'm inspired by your show, and I'm confused about the way we're considering personhood. We are assigning personhood to machines such as corporations without clarification of citizenship, and then we give tax cuts on the basis of free speech, but we get rewarded with our wage suppression. So I guess if we talk about money as free speech, wouldn't that imply a constitutional right to a living wage? And then if we do have these machines that are called corporations that are people,
that's a good question. I'm going to kick that one over to Kevin. Kevin, you want to take that?
Well, I think thanks for the call, David. Those exact problems. I think you're seeing what a lot of Americans are seeing, this whole idea of corporate personhood allowing corporations to be treated with human rights and money is equal to speech and all these kinds of redefinitions just, you know, don't make a lot of sense. And
I think there's an
effort called Move to Amend that's working on a constitutional amendment to end corporate personhood and get money out of politics. They'll be on January 20th. They'll be in Washington, D.C., and we'll be doing actions with them. Actually, they're doing actions all over the country, but we'll join the D.C. action to protest. This is the United decision, which expanded the power of the wealthy and corporations to influence elections with unlimited
expenditures. And similarly, on the minimum wages, the non-living wages people are given, we're in the race to the bottom. There's just an article today in the news about a study that came out that showed that Germany produces twice as many cars as the United States. Of course, we're a much bigger country, but Germany produces twice as many cars as we do, and they pay their workers twice as much as we do. Why? Because there's no race to the bottom there. People are allowed to be organized. Workers are allowed to be organized there. They're allowed to continue to expand their unions and their strength, and therefore the corporations are not able to take advantage of workers. Here we pretty much outlawed union organizing way back in the 1950s with the Taft-Hartley law. We've made it harder and harder ever since, and union power is shrinking. Now there's lots of problems with unions. I don't like their ties to the Democratic Party, for example. But there's no question that union, collective bargaining, workers joining together to advocate for their wages together, strengthens workers greatly, creates a middle class that can then fund the economy. If you make workers poorer and destroy the middle class, you're going to see that the economy is going to falter, and that's what we're seeing in the United States, a tremendous shrinkage of the middle class while the wealthy get wealthier.
Absolutely. I think unions are an organic check on corporate power. That is one of their great functions in society.
I just want to follow up on something, if you can still hear me, I'm not sure. But I think the proportionality is important because slavery was reversed by the 14th Amendment on the basis of not being three-fifths of a person. But the only thing we seem to have done is increase the size of the plantation owners. BP is a lot more disproportionate than three-fifths to me, and my money gets drowned out like a little bitty horn in a field of a PA system the size of Safeco Field that they have for their voice. So constitutionally, right. I just don't see a basis for that. I think if we go back to the original court case that Tom Hartman talks about, that was not really debated or decided that way, but the court transcriber
changed the
transcription of the case that started this type of precedent that seems to have been assumed because they didn't have internet back then. But and Roberts can go back 100 years as president to promote Citizens United. He should be impeached for that, and we should go back and point out that that transcript was a counterfeit.
The only way it's going to happen is people getting organized. Organized, educated, organized, and mobilized. That's the task of every citizen. And if you're not getting organized and not mobilizing people, then you're not doing your job as a citizen. We need to create a more perfect union. There's lots of problems in this country, and they can be fixed, but only if we get mobilized and become the balance against the concentrated wealth of people who dominate the government.
I want to go to Michael in the Bronx. Michael in the Bronx, you're on with Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese.
Good evening, everybody. How you doing?
All right. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing okay, and I'm also mad as hell as what's going on here. I mean, Adam, you're doing a hell of a great job in tying all this together with the Occupy Wall Street. It ties in to your previous discussions of what people are so mad as hell. And let me explain why. The things that I have seen, especially since you talked about the systemic clearing out of the Occupy camps, what have we seen there? We've seen a number of inexcusable, unacceptable, unlawful, and unconstitutional police abuse towards innocent, law-abiding protesters that were there protesting peacefully. And the thing is that while the abuse was going on, it was also being encouraged by these right-wing pundits that we see on Fox News and all these other media outlets that had the gall to fabricate and falsely say that the protesters are mean, they're violent, they're vicious, you have to fight fire with fire, where the violence was mainly coming from the police and somebody was giving the orders. No one wants to talk about that. No one wants to talk about some of the victims from the police abuse, which includes someone that served in the Iraq War, a military veteran. Another victim was a pregnant woman that was slammed to the ground face first by a cop and, from what I heard, suffered a miscarriage. This goes right back to your initial topic of why the hell is that the right-wingers are so obsessed with trying to overturn abortion rights and claim to be right to life. They ain't right to life. This is all about trying to control the woman, trying to control the middle class, trying to control the minorities. It's nothing but a farce. They have no concerns of women. They have no concerns of the unborn babies.
Michael, let me stop you. I've got a couple of other calls on the board, but I do really appreciate the call. And I want to give Margaret a chance, but I want to make sure that we get to these calls. So I do appreciate it. I think that part of the problem is that there's a kind of a meta consideration here that's beyond right wing and left wing, that it's all part of a system that is really completely broken and needs to be kind of overturned. When I talk about revolution, I talk about it in terms of one complete cycle, one complete circle, a complete turning over of what exists now, so that the top is on the bottom and the bottom becomes exposed, and it does get ugly. We have to take a break. Our guests are Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeis. When we come back, your calls and more with Margaret and Kevin. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show. This is the place where fierce independence is the norm. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman in for Norm this week before the year changes. It is a pleasure and an honor to be here. My guests are Kevin Zeis and Margaret Flowers. They are core organizers on the ground in Washington, D.C., have been there since October, literally on the ground, camping out, sleeping in place, holding Freedom Plaza for the last, 4 or 5 months. These two people are the most committed and the wisest political activists I know, which is why I invited them on the show. Kevin and Margaret, welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Margaret, I want to direct this at you. You know, a few weeks ago we were talking and I was saying, you know, I want the Occupy movement out there and, you know, giving Obama hell and giving the candidates hell. And you kind of redirected my thinking, and it's been with me ever since, that in a way we want to direct the attention away from the political minutiae of the day, because what we really need is a redemocratization of our economic system, because that's where the problem really is. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. That's one big piece of it. What we're really looking at here is the beginning of a long-term effort. You know, people have tried to tinker with the current system, and again we've seen that that's a failure, and that what we need to do is really transform the system. So when we were preparing for this occupation of Freedom Plaza, we were studying kind of the history of nonviolent movements, because it is imperative that this be a nonviolent movement, which I'm so amazed to see that how well so many, including many young people, have maintained that stance of nonviolence. But how do you actually shift the power? And there are certain structures that hold up this current power system, and we need to be strategic in how we weaken those structures and begin to shift the power away from concentrated corporate capital back towards meeting the needs of people, protecting the planet as well. So so a piece of that is democratizing the economy, things like local currencies and public banks and employee-owned or consumer-owned businesses. These are all very important pieces. What we're looking to create is a type of participatory democracy where more people have input into decisions that are made, and that the decisions that are made and the systems that are put in place benefit more people instead of funneling the wealth up to the top.
For your recommendation tomorrow, Gar Alperovitz is going to be on the show to talk about his book, America Beyond Capitalism. As I said, as per your recommendation, I'm really looking forward to having a discussion with him about exactly how we do redemocratize our economic system and many of the other attendant systems to that. I want to go to calls and make sure we make time for people. Let's go to Pat in Seattle. You're on with Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeis. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hey, Adam, how you doing?
All right.
I just want to have you indulge me for a minute. You know, Norman just said to try to do impressions, and I've got Sean Connery here with me. Oh, how you doing, Adam? Pat's told me all about you, just like a liberal bringing a microphone to a gunfight. Anyway, that's the best I can do. You know, I've been looking at the papers like the New York Times with all the people showing up to protest against Putin, and you read the copy, and it's like people from all walks of life in Russia are popping up. Even Gorbachev is weighing in, you know. And next year you're going to see the same thing happen. It was a little sloppy. Occupy Wall Street was a little sloppy. The toothpaste is out of the tube. And basically I think next year you're going to see a more cohesive movement. of grandma and grandpa, the mailman, everybody in society. Because, you know, the Republicans are going to try and pull some stuff next year. You know they are, like food shortages and stuff. They're going to manipulate everything. They're not done with us because they're sneaky. You know, they're not big, strong people, so they have to be sneaky and cunning. And we're
they have to cheat.
Well, we're the proletariats. We're the people, man. And I just know that we're going to win because we are the people. I mean, that's all there is to it. It doesn't matter if Barack Obama's Wall Street or Mitt Romney's Wall Street. They're scared as hell. I mean, even the Republican debates, they mentioned, Occupy three times, you know? It's not going to go on like this. But anyway, I'm constantly amazed at the intelligence of the callers. And I'm really, these guests you have, Deese and Margaret tonight, are spot on. Health isn't that good right now, but I'm going to let you go.
I'll do my Al Pacino and say thank you very much for the call. I'm going to go back to my guest, but thank you. He was doing his Sean Connery. I've been trying to do Norman encouraged me to do impressions. So that leads us into kind of some concluding remarks. What is up for the spring? I don't care which one of you takes this, but what's up for the spring? Talking about we're going to be a better, more cohesive, more organized movement in the spring. Do you see that?
I do. I think that your call got pretty much right on that front. There was going to be, we're calling for Now D.C., National Occupation of Washington, D.C. on March 30th. We're urging all occupiers to come to Washington, D.C. and join us here. It's going to be a major transformational moment. I think the thing that your caller started to touch on but didn't get quite right is that, yes, they are very sly. They're not done with the S, but it's not the Republicans. It's the corporatists. And Obama's part of the problem. The Democrats are part of the problem. They're not done with us yet, and we're going to see both parties not doing the people's business. We have to form a movement that challenges both political parties. We're like the civil rights movement in the 1950s, where we are building to challenge the corporatists of both parties. They built to challenge the Jim Crow Democrats and the racist Republicans, and we're doing the same on both parties here. That's where the problems are. It's not just the Republicans. We need to recognize that our challenge is corporatism, not one or other of the political parties.
I think that's a really critical, critical distinction to make, because I think that when we start to identify sides as if there really are two distinct sides, we get kind of hypnotized into believing that all of the political gossip of the day actually is of any merit at all or has any impact, and it doesn't. You know, Herman Cain's latest accuser is, has nothing to do with the tragic implications of a system going unattended, which is where we are at. Margaret, we only have a couple of minutes. Your parting shot. Where do you see this movement going in the next year or two?
Well, I think it's really important to look at the resources that we have and decide where we're going to put our energies. And I'm putting all of my energies into building the movement, into educating people about how we can weaken the structures that hold up this current system so that we can change it through democratizing the various institutions. That's a lot of the focus of Now D.C. The National Occupation of Washington, D.C. will be teach-ins and workshops on how people can go back to their communities, do this work effectively to shift the power. So I think that we should look at these elections for what they are. They're a mirage. It's a false conversation. We're going to be having the real conversation of what people can do now to start meeting our needs and shift that power.
And is the best website to send people to stay tuned to what is happening, OccupyWashingtonDC.org?
At this point, it's OccupyWashingtonDC.org, and we'll have the Now DC website hopefully up and running soon.
Well, when it's up and running, will you both come back on the show and give us an update?
Absolutely, Adam. Our pleasure.
You're an addict, Adam.
I am.
We love you.
I love you guys. Thank you so much for all the amazing and important and dedicated work that you do. Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers, thanks for coming on the Norman Goldman Show with
me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good night.
So when we come back, stay on the line. We're going to take your calls. We're going to go back to dealer's choice. We're going to go back to dealer's choice. Then that means, for those of you who don't play poker, that you get to choose the topic. You, when you are on the line, I'm going to talk a little bit about what it means to be mad as hell, particularly in the context of this Occupy conversation. You are listening to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served, where fierce independence is the norm, and where Adam Klugman is sitting in for Norman Goldman. We'll be right back.